and wondered how. Who had then been naive enough to ask him about it instead of just reporting it, and trusting enough to turn his back when Colette promised him he'd stop shifting stims and go straight. Edra, who had been tougher than he'd expected, and taken quite a bit of killing.
"Hold speed," Frayn says from behind Colette. "We can't get ahead of the troops, much as I'd like to."
The tank commander might be a slight more clever than Curie, but Frayn isn't a threat to Colette's off-duty habits either. She's so damned pious that every minute she's not in the tank is spent at prayer, or having holy words inked in any space she's got left.
"No, sir," says Vern.
Colette can hear the smile in the driver's voice. Stone King shrugs aside debris from another of the Kevrone's wrecked chimeras with her dozer blade. The shell of the transport is still burning. It's been torn up from the middle outwards to open up like a wild blossom. Big exit wound. More small arms fire rings against Stone King. Colette sees bodies, too, for moments at a time, through the framed focus of the targeter. There was a time long ago when the sound of Stone King's engines rattled his ears, right down into his throat. But now he finds he misses it when she is quiet. He loves hearing her sing. In all of the ways, that's true.
60 seconds,
he shouts as the overlay zeroes towards green. And then an impact shakes Stone King, rattling dust and grit from the tank's frame above Colette's head.
"Long-range missile fire," Vern says, "from the Sanctum's barricades."
Curie laughs loud over the engine's roar.
"That won't come through," he says. "They should know better."
"You're right,"
Frayn says, and there's something in her voice.
"They should."
Colette keeps his eyes on the Sanctum and the Avenue, and catches sight of another chimera afire, another with that same big exit wound, from the inside out, and he goes cold just the same way.
"Mines!" he shouts. "They've mined the Avenue!"
"Full stop!"
Frayn yells. Colette hears her shout over the vox to the other fire giants in the column behind, but he loses her words to a catastrophic explosion that shakes more than just dirt and dust. Colette cracks his head off the targeter mount and goes blind for an instant. When his sight comes back, it's narrow, by nature, lidded, because he is dizzy and aching, and there's blood running into his eyes. Stone King's engine is still roaring, but differently to before. She's hurting like he is. Over the noise, he can hear Vern cursing over and over.
"We're not dead," Colette slurs.
"No," Vern shouts, "but Mountain Song is."
Colette blinks and tries to focus through the targeter. The view is awash with fire and smoke and smears that might be the glassaic or might be his eyes. But when they pull back enough, and he blinks enough, he sees it. The shell of their sister machine, torn up from the inside, like a wild blossom.
"Lieutenant!"
Colette shouts, twisting in his seat to try and see her.
"We need a plan!"
Frayn's face is a mask of blood, but she's alive. Awake. She pulls down the vox handset and clicks it live.
"To hell's with a plan," she says. "What we need are wings."
Cassia Till looks out from behind the door gunner on the Valkyrie, hanging on to the handhold built into the wall of the troop compartment. The wind howls past as the gunship turns sharply, angling her towards the avenue below. Inside her enclosed helm, it just sounds like whispers. She sees the wreckage of the lead demolisher, burning like a fire for the dead.
"It's Mountain Song,"
Till says over the Duskhound's internal channel.
"Slain by fire."
Jeth curses. Maya says nothing. The Valkyrie screams as it dips below the buildings and into the avenue at speed. The airframe shakes and rattles right down Till's arm. Grey stone and metal rush by, and the gunners on their heavy bolter turrets open fire into the buildings on either side of the avenue, though they can't hope to hit much at that speed. And then the rocket pods fire from under the Valkyrie's wings. Clusters of rockets streak over the top of the rest of Grey Company and the remaining fire giants in the avenue, impacting on the open ground between the tanks and the Sanctum of Bones in rolling waves, and triggering the mines buried under the rockcrete. The explosions happen in quick succession, throwing dirt and chips of stone so high in the air that some of it finds its way into the Valkyrie and clatters off Till's carapace plate. She can't help but smile.
"Now that is thunder," Jeth says.
He is at the other side door, braced in it with his Hellgun up at his shoulder.
"Quite the racket," Maya replies, flatly.
The sighted fire back from their gun nests in the buildings on either side of the avenue, and from the sanctum itself. Dozens of squads in blue-grey flak are arrayed in front of the spire behind crude fortifications, protecting the shielded face of the spire with missiles and solid rounds and hails of las.
"Hope you're hanging on,"
the gunner yells as he answers the enemy fire with his own. Then the Valkyrie pulls into a steep climb up the face of the sanctum. Till's world tilts, but she has a snap harness attached to her plate, and she clings to her handhold as the engines howl and the airframe groans under the stress. And then they are up and away, and out of the range of the sighted's guns. There are holes in the Valkyrie's hull, big enough to see through in places where they took the high-caliber rounds. The world tilts back and the gunner turns. His face is weather-tanned around his goggles and breather. Till can tell he is grinning, even with most of his face covered like that.
"Just a detour, sir," he shouts.
"Coming up on your drop," Jova, the pilot, says.
30 seconds.
Till nods at Jeth and Maya, and they move their way to the back ramp of the Valkyrie. She feels the way the aircraft cuts speed as a tug on her bones, followed by the vertical thruster jets kicking in as they move into position above their drop.
"Quickly now," Jova says. "We have Hawks on our radar."
"Ready," she says to her dusk hounds. Because in that moment, without fell, that's what they are. Hers. Her responsibility.
"Aye,"
the two of them say together. Till hammers the release switch for the Valkyrie's rear ramp. The ramp lowers and opens to the roar of the wind and the gunship's jump jets. The blast shields are pitted layers of adamantium mix that cover the whole side of the spire, save for those three heat exchange vents, each tall enough for a soul to stand up in and protected by heavy industrial grating. A lip of black iron no more than 2 meters wide runs beneath them. That's it. Their designated drop. Beyond that ledge, the spire drops dizzyingly towards the ground. Almost half a kilometer of freefall. And not one of the heart rates in Till's helmet display flickers at the sight of it. Till fires the grapnel line down onto the ledge, where it sticks, and then hooks the cable to the rappel anchor in the airframe of the gunship. The cable auto-winds in and goes taut, even in the high wind.
"Let's go and make some feats,"
Till says, and she takes hold of the cable and swings out into a quick descent. Till feels the pull of the wind. The temperature measure in her helmet's display drops sharply. The slide is fast, and over in seconds. Till's boots hit iron, and she moves straight to the heat exchange vents, with Jeth and Maya right behind her.
"Dusk hounds free and clear,"
she tells Jova over the vox. Maya gets to setting the heat chargers. They activate with white-hot flashes of light and start eating their way through the industrial-grade plasteel of the vent covers.
"Acknowledged," Jova replies. "Maintaining cover."
The Valkyrie turns, holding position over the spire, and then Till hears the scream of Hawks on the chase.
"You might want to hurry yourselves," Jova says. "It's about to get noisy out here."
Till looks out to see the enemy fighters drop through the cloud cover. Lightnings, two of them. Jova's Valkyrie moves out at speed to engage.
"Maya,"
Till says, putting her Hellgun to her shoulder. Her rifle is modified with a long-shot scope and an extended barrel, but even that won't allow her to hit the lightnings, not at that speed.
10 seconds,
Maya replies. It's nothing, 10 seconds. 10 heartbeats. But in those 10 seconds, Cassia Till sees Jova's Valkyrie fire its las cannon, a spear of light. The lightnings both answer with their Hellstrike missiles in the same instant. White smoke and fire flashes. Countermeasure flares burst around the Valkyrie, making a halo for it. Her helmet display dims. Till takes a breath, fires her Hellgun anyway. Despite herself, for the sparest instant, she thinks about that half a kilometer of freefall. The bolt from the las cannon takes one of the lightnings, turning it into a fireball. It stops screaming and falls out of the sky. The second fighter peels up and away into the clouds with a roar of afterburners. And in the last of Till's 10 seconds, both Hellstrike missiles hit Jova's Valkyrie. The gunship keens and tilts sideways, smoking, spinning, losing altitude and fuel in the stream of liquid fire. The vox link with Jova clicks live in her ears, but not a word is said. Till only hears altitude alarms and feedback.
"We're in,"
Maya says. Cassia Till blinks, then turns away from the edge and the city, and the Valkyrie falling to Earth. "Let's go," she says, and walks into the darkness of the vent system.
"Now," Frayn says, "we break them!"
Colette's eyes are still dazzled from the mines going up as Vern guns Stone King's engine and she rolls forwards again, into the devastation left by the mines. Her joints and her tracks creak and sigh. Beside them, their sister machines do the same. Behind them, the troops follow.
30 seconds to outside range,
Colette shouts. This time, the sighted aren't trying to bait them. They are trying to break them. Stone King shakes and cries around Colette as the targeter hones towards zero. But he doesn't want to hear that. He wants to hear her sing. The instant they hit outside range, he calls it out and waits for the words.
Main cannon fire,
Frayn yells. Colette thumbs the firing stud and Stone King sings. Her sisters join her a moment later. The detonations from the demolisher shells shake his bones, even at outside range.
Load!
Colette shouts as smoke blooms and rolls, obscuring his view of the barricades.
Aye!
Curie shouts. Not slow now. Quick when it counts. Vern keeps pushing Stone King forwards as Curie reloads the main cannon. Close range is all the better for breaking. The closer they get, the more Colette can see the damage they've done. The sighted's barricades are a ruin, and their guns are quieted. But the blast shielding on the spire is still up. It doesn't seem a good trade. Not for Mountain Song.
Up!
Curie shouts.
Cannon ready!
Fire!
Frayn shouts. Colette fires again, and Stone King sings and screams at the same time as more enemy fire rocks her. He cracks his head again. Curie curses from the loader's run. The massive detonation from the fired shells rattles Colette's bones and crashes his teeth together. He can't help but shut his eyes. But when he opens them again, and the glare has stopped printing on them, he can see it. Colette puts his hand up against the tank's frame, proud and hurting, just as his machine is.
It's broken,
he shouts, hoarse.
Move up,
Hale shouts.
Into the sanctum.
Rain keeps pace alongside the Antari of Grey Company as the fire giants push their way through the rubble they've made. Enemy fire has all but ceased in the face of the armored detachment's fury. Rain's ears ring from the sound of it, and when she blinks, the fire burst prints on her eyes. Pride burns in her chest. Beside her, Yulia Chris laughs out loud.
Now that's a sight,
she shouts. The smoke and the ashes clear to expose the great dark wounds opened in the face of the spire by the demolisher shells. They are ragged and toothed by snapped supports. As the fire giants grind through, they don't look like giants at all. The scale of the sanctum, and of the wounds they have given it, make them look like toys. The darkness swallows the tanks whole. As Rain charges after them through the rubble and thick choking dust, she feels it do the same to her. The darkness is absolute. Heavy. Ahead of her, the fire giants make a wall of armor, their engines echoing balefully. The high-powered stab lights mounted on their halls fade to nothing before they can find the sanctum's opposite wall. Around Rain, the Antari of Grey Company fan out to secure the entryway. The way the dust clings to their uniforms and their skin, they truly are grey. Shadows in the shadows. The depleted First Company of the Caveron Dragoons take up their positions too. Rain sees the way they move, disciplined and ordered. She hears Lucia's words as clearly as if she were standing beside her. It is an honor to serve with them.
Rain!
The shout comes from Vander. In his clipped accent, her name is made of edges. The Caverone's commissar is made of edges too, his face locked in a scowl.
Capture, he says. Excise, preserve. Those were our orders.
Rain looks around at the Antari in position. This is capture, she says calmly.
And preservation?
Vander snaps.
What of that?
The Antari know exactly how to break an opening, Rain says. The Sanctum can more than withstand the damage. Vander stares at her.
If you are proven wrong, then you will answer to Sylar as well as Keen, Vander says.
Rain holds his gaze. I am right, she says, and she means it in an altogether different way.
Commissar!
Rain turns to see Hale standing there. Grey Company's captain is plastered with masonry dust.
The perimeter is established, Hale says, but there is something you need to see. Both of you.
Rain nods. She follows Hale to the most forward point of their beachhead with Vander at her side. The demolisher tank Stone King waits there, growling in the dark. Beside it stands Lydia Zane. Picked out in the diffuse glow from the tank's stab lights, she looks like an apparition.
The Sanctum of Bourne's, Zane says, in her kindling dry voice. That is the name, is it not?
It is, Rain says to her.
It seems they made a truth of it, Zane says absently, pointing out into the darkness.
Rain cannot see the things that Zane can. Most of the time she is grateful for that. But in this moment, all it does is run chills through her bones.
Show me,
Rain says. Hale takes a flare launcher from his belt and fires it, up and high into the sanctum. The flare bursts red and falls, throwing enough light to see the heavy ironwork arches and support pillars that bear the weight of the sanctum above, the hanging devotionals and loops of broken cable, the statues of the Emperor in his guise as healer, hands outstretched, and to see the bodies. Hundreds of bodies. Twisted, contorted, and so very still.
The Sanctum of Bourne's,
Zane says again, as a whisper. Rain's eyes aren't printed with the glare of the fire giant's work anymore, or the red glow of the flare in the darkness. When she blinks now, it's those bodies that she sees.
Our orders are clear, she says to Hale. Our obligation to the dead, too.
Excise,
Hale says. Rain narrows her eyes.
Excise, she says.
Chapter 11. Those Who Are Lost. Cassia Till breaks the neck of the sighted scout with a swift, quick movement and catches him as he slumps against her, dead weight. The sawn-off shotgun the scout carries swings loose by the strap. Beside her, Jeth does the same with the other sighted unlucky enough to be patrolling the corridor. Emergency lighting paints everything red as Till and Jeth drag the bodies out of the hallway and into an adjoining chamber they have already cleared. The level was once part of the augmetics facility. Chromed surfaces reflect the red light back at Till, and there are runnels cut into the tiled floors to collect spilled blood and drain it away. There's a good deal of it blackening the central drain. Bare, wicked instruments are arranged on trays. Something about it prickles at Till's memories. Something just beyond recall, long buried. She reaches out and touches one of the cutting knives, and it spins on the tray, flashing in the light.
Ready?
Jeth's voice makes her flinch. She turns fast.
Whoa,
he says. Till shakes her head. Sorry, she says. It's this place. He nods.
I know,
he says. There's a wickedness here. Till feels a wry smile cross her face at that.
We wouldn't be here otherwise, she says.
Jeth laughs at that. Maya doesn't. She never laughs. Till rounds back out into the hallway with them following her as shadows. In the red light, the Duskhounds could for all the world be inside a dead, desiccated thing. The sanctum's arches are like black iron bones, the cracked plaster like skin. The sighted are like vermin, chewing their way into the carcass. Till moves up to the next corner and stops, before holding up her hand for the others to do the same. The temperature gauge in her helmet's display has dropped sharply, just like outside the spire. Like a winter wind, frost slicks the floor and walls. Till picks up noise, footsteps, low voices with Laxian accents. 4 targets. Till listens a second longer. No, 5.
Rendon blind, she says. Left. 50 meters.
Myron Jeth send bursts of vox back as acknowledgement. Then the 3 of them round the corner. 5 sighted stand between the dusk hounds and the edge of the shield they have been tasked with dropping. Till sees it behind them, catching the light like smeared glass. The sighted are dressed in heavy boots and helmets, padded layered fatigues, and flak armor plates hung with feathers and bits of broken glass on dirty cord. None of it does them much good against hell guns on full charge. 2 of the scouts go down, punched through with smoking holes before they can react. The other sighted aren't quite so slow. 2 raise their auto rifles and begin to fire as the flash charge that Maya slid along the floor goes off and blinds them. Shots go wild around Till as she keeps moving, unflinching. Her visor dips to compensate for the flare of light, which is how she catches the 3rd of the sighted, fleeing towards the shield. He's the alarm.
We've got a runner, she says, over the internal vox. Her hellgun whispers and puts one of the shooters on his back.
Jeth takes 2 hard rounds against his carapace plate in order to put the other against the wall. He hits the sighted so hard that the scout goes limp and leaves a streak of blood down the tiles as he collapses into a heap. Maya drops the runner with a whisper from her own rifle when he's just meters from the shield's edge, sending him sprawling across the floor. Till can hear him breathing still. Cursing, too. She steps over the other dead. The scout is trying to drag himself for the shield, but his legs won't obey him because of the hole through him and the blood running into the gaps between the floor tiles. Till fires another las bolt, and the scout stops scrabbling, with a long, ragged gasp, and goes still. This close to the shield, it's even colder. Till realizes that flakes of snow are dizzying around her. Where they hit her armor, they melt and bead. Where they hit the shield, they evaporate with a snap of blue light. The cold is strange, but not as strange as the feeling she gets standing near it. Like looking at those knives again. Unsettling. It makes her want to turn and run, and she can taste grave dirt, despite her breather's filters, which tells her exactly what kind of shield it is.
This is witch work, she says. A psychic shield.
Well, shit, Jeth says. There has to be a way through, Maya says, unless they trap their scouts on the outside.
Till frowns, and it's not just because of the shield. It's because of what she can hear coming from beyond it.
What is that? Jeth asks.
Till can tell from the way he says it that he knows as well as she does what it is, from the way his heart rate spikes in her helmet view.
Singing,
she says absently.
That's Saul of Antar.
Rain steps over and around the dead as she leads the Antari deeper into the Sanctum of Bones. Mist scuds, knee-high, moving like a tide, like 100,000 exhalations of breath. Above Rain, the ceiling seems impossibly high, lost to darkness and distance. Even with all that space, Rain still feels the pressure of the sanctum all around her, the weight of it, like water waiting behind a dam as the stone of it begins to crack.
We have put them to the chase, Vanda says. They know the fury they face, and they hide from it. Cowards!
He doesn't sound disdainful this time. He sounds disgusted. Vanda has his long rifle drawn and braced. The gold decoration on the barrel of it glitters where it catches stablight beams. His eyes glitter too, like green gemstones. I don't think this is hiding, Rain says. I think it is waiting. Vanda scowls.
Whatever it is, they should know better. Their deaths are assured. They will answer for their sins.
The smell of death carries to Rain on the air. Overhead, the sanctum creaks, tectonic. As all sinners will, she says to Lucas Vanda. For an instant, Vanda's scowl disappears, replaced with a fleeting uncertainty. But it is just an instant, and then it is gone, and his control reasserts itself. He turns away from her, to what is left of his company.
Vengeance does not wait, he calls out. Pick up the pace!
Then Vanda stalks away through the mist. Rain follows him, keeping her pistol raised and her fingers close to the trigger. As she pushes through the mist, it parts and shifts enough for her to see the bodies, the bloodied vacancies where their eyes should be, and the marks made in their skin, the rictus grins on their faces.
This is bad, Yuri Hale says beside her. All of this death, all of this quiet.
They've made a curse of it,
Mac Arcade says. The Vox operator is twitchy, sweeping his las rifle back and forth.
Trap the souls of the dead where he can't find them.
His words are superstitious, but Rain can't disagree with all of it. The sanctum really does feel cursed, tainted.
Keep your hearts fierce and your minds strong,
Rain says, loudly enough so it carries.
This place is meant to make us fear, to make us falter. We will do neither.
The Vox crackles in her ear.
Not everyone here is dead.
The voice is Wick's. It is breathless, but Rain cannot hear gunfire, not over the Vox, or on the wind.
Sighted,
Hale asks. Wick has that jagged grin on his face. Rain can tell just from the tone of his voice over the Vox.
Not sighted, he says. Round up those highborn bastards we brought with us, and tell them we found their missing kin.
Wick moves up slow with his gun drawn and pointed, his wild folk at his side. Above them, the shielding flickers. It feels like knives running over his bones and makes him see shadows when he blinks. The shield doesn't feel like void. It feels like fear, captured and set to work. But before Wick and his wild folk can even get near the shield, there is the more immediate problem. In front of Wick, lights are burning. Flares, mostly. They are all scattered around a deep, still pool that's bigger than some of the minor lakes back in the Vales. The water looks like blood in the red burn of the flare light. Statues of the God Emperor watch the water, too. The changing light transforms his face, making it wrathful. Around the pool and between the statues, there are figures kneeling. Must be almost 100 of them. They are as still as the water. Their blue and white uniforms are recolored in red by that hissing flare light. Not one of them turns as the wild folk approach them.
Sarge,
Chris whispers.
What in the hell's this going on here?
Her voice sounds slow to him, painfully so. He could swear those stims he took from Colat are stronger than what Lai used to give him. Either that, or what she said was true, and maybe the doses really are killing him. The way he's feeling right now, that thought makes Wick want to laugh. He has to take a breath, count it out, just like he told Harrow.
The Cavron said that their second company were trapped here, Wick mutters. But they don't look trapped.
They look spellbound,
Chris whispers, with fear in her voice.
Is it the water?
The water's for cleansing, Ord murmurs. Those who came here for healing had to pass through it first.
Wick has heard of practices like that. They do something similar on Antar's coast's edge. Take the sick and the injured down to the sea and walk them into the water. The salt and the cold is meant to aid them. Not so in the Vales. The Black Lakes give nothing. They only take. He holds up his hand for the others to stop. The left, with the wild folk's mark on it. so they know he means it.
Sarge, Chris whispers.
Wick ignores her and keeps moving. He's close enough now that he should be able to see the closest of the spellbound soldiers breathing through his rifle sights. Should be able to, but can't. Wick is close enough now to see that their hands are dark with old blood, too. No good, he thinks. He's about to vox back when he hears bootsteps at his back.
What is this?
The spellbound soldier twitches at the sound of the voice. The movement is almost mechanical. Wick's nerves fire at the sight of it, and his heart starts to thunder in his ears. No, he thinks, definitely no good. The words come from the Cavrone's commissar, Vander, the one with the wicked eyes. He strides through the mist past Wick with Elevin, that captain of his that barely looks old enough to be tithed. Rain is there too, and Hale. Wick has never been thankful to see her before, but compared to the Cavrone's commissar, she's a known threat.
Wait, Wick says to them. Don't. I think they're spellbound.
Rain stops. So does Hale. Vander doesn't. He doesn't acknowledge Wick's words at all. He draws his pistol and walks right over to the spellbound soldier.
On your feet,
Vander says, loud and clear. And as one, the spellbound soldiers around the pool get to their feet.
Vander,
Rain says, warningly. She raises her pistol. The spellbound soldiers turn, with sharp, twitching motions, like wooden dolls puppeted by cord. Vander snarls. Elevin murmurs something in his own tongue.
Mist's alive, Wick says.
Every damned one of the spellbound soldiers is blinded, just like the sighted dead. From their bloody hands, Wick can guess how it was done. As one, the spellbound raise their blades. No rifles, just knives.
Stand down, Vander calls out. In the name of the God Emperor!
There's a moment, like a held breath, where nobody moves, and all Wick can hear is the thunder of his heart. Then, as one, the spellbound speak with a voice that isn't theirs, one that sounds like old, dry leaves turning. A witch's voice.
Oh, you poor fools,
they say.
Your god emperor is dead.
Wick's finger tightens on the trigger of his las rifle, but before even he fires, with all of his stim-given speed, there's a boom from Rain's pistol, and the spellbound soldier closest to Vander spills over onto his back. His head spills open too. And that's what does it. It lights the firefight inside the Sanctum of Bones. The fight quickly becomes a chaotic rush that reminds Rain of how the Skolem's lower levels would flood back on Gloam. A violent, inescapable rush. The spellbound soldiers might not be armed with rifles, but they refuse to fall until they are forced to. Rain has taken cuts from a dozen blades. Blood runs down her sword arm and soaks through her tunic at the waist. She grits her teeth and pushes the pain aside.
Heart strikes! Rain shouts. Headshots! Quick, clean kills!
Rain lets her forward momentum carry her into the next upward strike. Even Fall's powered blade separates the soldier's head from his body. It doesn't bleed as it falls. The smell of old death rolls up like fog from the ocean. Rain is already turning and firing her pistol again. Another of the spellbound soldiers falls backwards into the cleansing pool. They don't thrash or scream. They just drop. Around her, the Antari light the sanctum with las fire. Through the melee, she sees Vander's Cavrone do the same. They have broken into ordered, disciplined pairs, with one soldier covering the other. Despite the fact that they are firing on their own spellbound kin, they do not hesitate. Vander has had to sling that long rifle of his. There is no room for it in a space like this. Instead, he uses his own sword. It is not a duelist's saber, but a lightweight, double-edged blade, built for closeness and speed. He uses it deftly. Clean cuts and parries, opening the space around him as she has around her. Despite all she might think of him, Rain cannot deny Vander's skill as a fighter. One does not last as a regimental commissar on the bleeding edge of the Baelstars crusade without knowing how to kill. Rain's pistol runs dry, and before she can eject the magazine, one of the spellbound soldiers lunges for her. His eye sockets are ragged holes in his face, and his lips are blue and split. Rain backhands him with the weight of the bolt pistol. The blow caves in the soldier's face and sends him reeling. It should be more than enough to kill, but the spellbound soldier still arches and twists and tries to bury his knife in her chest. The blade never lands. A thunderclap of force turns the spellbound soldier soft and broken, and he collapses.
"We must find the one controlling them," Rain says. "We kill the Psyker, and the spell is broken."
Lydia Zane steps over the mess she has made and tilts her head. She breaks another of the spellbound soldiers with just a curl of her slender hands.
"We will not find her so easily," Zane says. "This is the work of Cretia Omatid. She who watches, who counts herself the sixth of nine."
Rain grits her teeth at the mention of one of the nine.
"All the more reason to find her and kill her," she says.
Zane nods her head. Her nose is bleeding slowly down her pale face.
"I hear Omatid's laughter in the way the spellbound move. She thinks this is a game, a fleeting amusement."
"And oh, is the amusement fleeting?"
The rasping voice of Cretia Omatid echoes from every one of the spellbound soldiers.
"As are so many things when you see as I do."
The spellbound soldiers stop fighting as one and collapse.
"A new game, I think."
This time, Omatid's voice doesn't come from the spellbound soldiers. It echoes inside Rain's head, a delighted whisper. Shadows crowd her vision, and Rain tastes blood.
"Yes,"
Omatid hisses.
"A new game."
One by one, every loyal soul succumbs to Omatid's whispers around Lydia Zane. Their thoughts turn dark, like ink spilling across cloth, and the sanctum rings with screams.
"It is false,"
pulses Zane, as loudly as she can.
"Omatid shows you lies."
If they hear her words, they do not heed them. Lasfire lights the sanctum as the two regiments fight back against the nightmares given to them by Omatid and fight each other in the blindness.
"No,"
Zane says,
"not like this."
She protects them from themselves and from each other. Zane engages gun safeties, ejects power cells, twists knives out of hands. She deflects lasfire and solid shot with flickers of telekine shielding. Every action is an effort, because Zane feels the pressure too. Omatid's whispers pry and pull at the edges of her mind, setting her birds crying and beating their wings. But Lydia Zane is practiced in ignoring whispers. She focuses all of her attention on Cretia Omatid herself, and on where she is.
"Oh no,"
comes the voice.
"I am not ready to come out yet, my sweet. I am busy with my games."
Zane is forced to one knee by the immensity of Omatid's will. Beside her, Kalvar Larat would have been no more than a dim old lumen light. Omatid is a witchfire, scorching and bright and hungry.
"I am so glad to see you here,"
Omatid pulses.
"My lovely broken thing."
Blood bursts from Zane's nose and runs from her false silver eyes.
"I am not yours," Zane replies. "My soul belongs to no one save the Emperor."
There is a pause that Zane knows to be softly amused. She can almost see the quirk of Omatid's smile. though she has never seen the traitor's face.
Does it now?
Omitid teases.
If that's true, then why is it that your kin tried to betray you? To break you? You cannot trust them, because they do not understand you. They will not understand you.
Zane does not answer. Instead, she starts to murmur her centering words in an effort to force Omitid out. Zane feels her affected sigh as trailing fingers up her spine.
I would treat you so well,
Omitid says.
But you are blind in more ways than one. Willfully so. It will be your end. The Manticore will come for you again, for he cannot afford to call it off.
Zane shudders. A long string of drool runs from her clenched teeth.
The Manticore?
She pulses.
You mean the King of Winter? The one who meant to put me in a casket? The one who sent his soldiers?
Omitid's laugh is discordant music.
The King of Winter,
she pulses.
How quaint.
Who is he?
Zane lashes at her, trying to force the answer. This time, Zane truly does see Omitid's smile. It blooms in her head like a resolving pict, from shapes to sharpness, blackened teeth, and bloody lips, glittering green gemstone eyes.
Oh, my sweet,
pulses Kreisha Omitid.
Now, that would be telling.
Omitid shows you lies.
Zane's voice makes Till stagger and shake, even though the witch is half a kilometer below in the bottom level of the sanctum. Till sees it do the same to Jeff, and to Maya, their heart rates spike momentarily in her helmet's display.
Teeth of Winter, Jeff snarls.
But Till isn't looking at him. She is looking at the shield, and the figure approaching from the other side. The world beyond the shield is smeared and blurry, so all Till can see is a shadow, painted in monochrome. The singing she could hear grows louder, and becomes more distinct, too. That voice. She knows that voice.
Till, Jeth says, what is this?
Till takes a couple of steps backwards as the shield flickers and distorts. She keeps her gun up and braced, and her finger resting on the trigger. Jeth and Maya do the same beside her, as a hole opens in the shield like eyelids moving apart, and the figure steps through. He stops singing and stands there in silence, with snow hitting his carapace plate. He has a hell gun drawn on them, too. Red crystal lenses watch them from the painted face of his mask. The painted face that Till knows as well as she does the one who wears it, as well as the singing voice. Her heart rate more than spikes this time, and her finger comes away from the trigger of her rifle. Saying the name hurts like a twisted knife in the chest.
Roll!
He lowers his rifle, just a fraction. Hey, Cass, he says. Till feels like she's lost her balance as Roll takes a step forwards. There's a deep fissure in his carapace armor that looks as though it was made by a powered blade. Save for that, though, and the strange pendant that looks like a vial on a chain around his neck, Roll looks the same as the last time Till saw him, when he had been laughing, like always.
Stay where you are,
Jeth snarls at Roll. He hasn't lowered his gun a hair.
Don't move.
Roll gives a little shake of his head.
Good to see you too, he says.
Thing is,
Jeth says,
I'm not sure I am seeing you, because you're dead.
Clearly not, Roll says.
What happened?
Till says, breathless.
We thought we had lost you.
I was lost, for a while, Roll says. He puts his hand to the mark on his carapace plate. The sight had got the drop on me and the forgers. They took me to a dark place with the intent to kill me. He laughs. That familiar, soft laugh. Turns out that I'm harder to kill than they think.
How did you get away?
Jeth asks. He still hasn't lowered his gun. How do you think? Roll says.
I'll tell you what I think. I think that Roll is dead, and that you're a sighted trick.
Aye, Maya says. You're a lie. Till heard what Zane said, but she can't believe it. Fel told her to trust her eyes and ears, but he also said to trust her heart. And it's the last one that's telling her that Roll is as real as she is. I'm not a lie, Roll says.
Then how did you come through the shield?
Jeth asks. This pendant is a key, Roll says. I took it from some scouts.
Sure,
Jeth replies. I'm telling you, I'm not a lie, Roll says again.
Prove it,
Till replies. Roll lowers his hellgun and slings it. He holds his hand out, palm down, the way they do when they train, when they take oaths.
Till,
Jeth says.
Wait.
Till ignores him. She slings her own gun and takes a step towards Roll, then reaches out and puts her hand flat on top of his. Her heart was right. He's as real as she is.
You're alive,
she manages to say.
But how?
Roll leans in closer, save for that new mark. Every pit and scuff on his armor is exactly how it should be.
Because they changed my fate, he says.
Then he moves, faster than she's ever known him to, too fast to stop. Roll grabs her by the arm and drives his combat blade between her ribs, then throws her backwards. Till lands hard and rolls. All of the air leaves her lungs. The pain makes her half blind and her heart thunders. He cut her. Roll, who was her kin, as good as a brother to her. He cut her. Till sees everything happen through lidded eyes as she struggles back to her feet, with blood soaking through her fatigues and dribbling all over the floor. Roll moves fast, hitting Jeth so hard that his mask shatters and he falls against the wall of the corridor and goes still. Maya fires on Roll, but he knocks her shot wild and puts her up against the wall by her throat.
Roll!
Till screams his name this time. His mask turns to her.
Caden,
she says, using his given name in the hope he'll snap out of it.
Stop!
He keeps looking at her as he twists his hand and breaks Maya's neck. Till feels as if the ground has fallen away. She screams and fires at him as he drops Maya and comes for her. Even half blind and bleeding, she hits him twice before he closes the gap and knocks her onto her back. Roll's armor is smoking from where the lasfire has grazed him and glanced from it. He disarms her and throws her gun clear first, then her knife. Then he puts a knee on her chest so she can't get free.
Looks as though the captain really did turn his back on you, Roll says.
You don't know a thing about it,
Till manages to say.
The captain has done no such thing, not like you.
Roll laughs, and it sounds like a bad echo of his voice.
Sure he did, he says, because he let his heart tell him what to do and not his head. Because he's compromised by it. That's what Creesha told me.
Omitted,
Till says the name like a curse.
What did that witch do to you?
She didn't leave me for dead in the forges for one thing, Roll says. Not like you.
He reaches up, unhooks his mask and pulls it free to show his face. Pale and freckled, with eyes so light they might as well be silver. Exactly as she remembers it, like his mask. Save for the fate mark cut into his skin, struck through. The day of the forge.
She changed my fate, Roll says. Gave me a new one, to keep me from the after.
Save me from death.
Till shakes her head. Her fingers are going numb, and her vision is blurring. She knows it won't be long before she blacks out.
You haven't seen it, Roll says. You don't know what it's like to hang over the edge like that. To know it's over, and to be offered a way out. And all it costs is your soul,
Till snarls. Roll sighs.
You get nothing without giving something in trade, he says. You know that.
Unmuted is using you,
she says.
You are nothing but a weapon.
And you, Roll says, what do you think that winged eagle you wear means? We are all just weapons to be used. At least I know what I am being used for.
Well, I'd rather be used in the name of light than of darkness,
Till says. Roll looks wounded then, as if he were hoping for a different answer.
She said you'd say that too,
he says with a sigh. He takes his hellgun from his belt and points it at her face.
Maybe you'll change your mind when you see it, when you're hanging over the edge like I was.
Till hears the pistol whine as it builds charge. That's when she moves with all of the energy she has left and all of the speed she can muster. She pulls his combat blade out from between her ribs and buries it in his neck. Roll fires the pistol reflexively and misses her by a handspan. Then he slumps sideways, choking.
There's no changing fate. No escaping death.
Till drags herself into a sitting position against the cold wall of the corridor.
A Duskhound should know that.
He gasps and whines, blood spreading across the floor. It looks black.
Cass,
he says to her. Then his eyes go glassy and his limbs go still. And Till sees a new fate mark take shape in the blood on his face. It matches perfectly to the time code in her mask's display, right down to the second. Till feels a tear slide from the corner of her eye under her mask. She goes to the pouch on her belt. Her hands shake as she opens it and takes out the auto-cauterizer and burns the knife wound closed. She lets her head rest against the wall and looks down the corridor at the shield. The shield they have been tasked with dropping. Then Cassia Till takes a long, slow breath, drags herself to her feet, and goes to fetch her gun. Severina Rain finds herself alone in a corridor hewn from old stone. There is a gentle thrum carrying through the walls and floor, rhythmic, like a heartbeat, a push and pull, the ocean. The wind howls around her, carrying flakes of snow that sting her skin and melt against her greatcoat. Torches snarl in sconces, flickering in the wind. Rain moves up with her pistol raised, her boots echoing on the flagstones of the floor. On the wall to her right, there are letters painted on the wall in red. Honor, duty, faith. Rain lowers her pistol slowly and holsters it. She reaches out with one of her gloved hands and puts her fingers to the word, faith.
Do you have it?
The words echo strangely, as if spoken by two voices. Rain looks around to see a man standing there, dressed in white, with a red sash slung across his chest. His medals glitter in the firelight, and his eyes glitter too. Behind him stand four lions of the Bale. Their faces are hidden by dark cloth masks. Executioner's masks.
Faith, Severina,
says Lord General Militant Alar Serek.
Do you have it?
Rain drops her hand away from the letters. She salutes him without thought, an instinctual reaction.
Yes, Lord, she says. My faith is my shield and my sword.
He shakes his head.
If that is true, then why are you carrying so many doubts?
Rain blinks. Doubts, she says. Serek takes a few steps towards her.
About the crusade, he says. About those who serve alongside you. About Mardan Tula's death.
He narrows his eyes. They look different to Rain. Not as blue as she remembers them to be.
Doubts about yourself, Serek says.
Rain curls her fists.
My doubts about the crusade are founded, Lord, she says. The Kavron, Sylar, they killed Tula to conceal their own actions. They are moving against you.
Are they? He asks her. Or are you seeing traitors in every corner because you want to see them? Because you want to believe that your sister was incapable of breaking faith?
Rain shakes her head. No, she says.
Is it because you want to believe yourself infallible? Serek asks her. Unbreakable?
His words feel like cuts, like gunshot wounds. She cannot stand them, nor the idea that she has disappointed this man that she so admires.
No, she says through her teeth. You took a soul off the line today, against orders and without seeking permission, Serek says. You are acting against the High Command because of your doubts. You are acting against the Crusade. Tell me, Severina Rain, what is the name we give to those who act against the Crusade?
Rain tries to speak, but the words escape her.
The word is traitor, Serek says.
His voice distorts and breaks up like a bad vox signal. And those eyes of his are definitely not blue. They are green and faceted like gemstones. On either side of Rain, other figures take their places against the wall. To her right, Mardan Tula, with ligature bruises marking his neck. Andron Fell, bruised and bleeding, his grey eyes flat, as if he is broken.
No,
Rain says. To her left, Rain sees Lucia, always Lucia. Looking at her sister is like looking in a mirror. Her warm brown skin, dark eyes, stark white scars. The blood blooming on her tunic from the firing squad that shot her.
Say it, Serek says. Admit what you have done, what you are.
Rain has her back against the wall, against the word faith. She puts one hand to the cold stone and feels the thrum of the ocean through it. She looks at Serek and at the lines of Bale with their guns held across their chests, and she grits her teeth, tasting blood and cold air and smoke from torches.
No, she says, because I know the truth of my heart. I know the strength of my faith. I am no traitor.
She raises her hands in front of her chest and makes the sign of the Aquila.
And I know this is a lie, she snarls, and I will not be broken by it.
The world flickers, just like the torchlight, like a corrupted Pict capture. Serek smiles at her, and it looks in no way as it should.
Yes, you will, he says,
and his voice echoes and doubles.
Everyone can be broken.
Serek holds up his hand, and the lions raise their guns as one. But they do not fire on her. The lions fire on Tula first, and he dies all over again, slumping down against the wall, leaving a thick trail of blood down the word honor.
I will not break!
Rain shouts again. Then the lions point their guns at Fell and fire. Rain cannot help but blink reflexively at the crack of Lazfire, nor can she help the way her heart aches as Fell dies too, with his blood spattered across the word duty and across her face and throat. Rain blinks again.
I will not break.
The words burn on the way out as the lions turn to point their guns at Lucia.
I was wrong,
Lucia says. Her voice doesn't echo or distort. It sounds exactly as Rain remembers it from the last time they spoke.
I thought that I could not be broken, she says. That I could not fail, and neither could you.
She looks at Rain with tears in her eyes, and puts out her hand. Her fingertips brush the sleeve of Rain's greatcoat.
I was wrong, she says again.
And the lions fire, and Lucia falls, and just like the first time, it leaves Rain with a vacancy in her soul. A part of her taken, extinguished. Rain feels her whole body start to tremor, even though she knows this is a lie. She drags her eyes from Lucia and looks back at Serac.
I will not break,
she says, her voice barely a whisper. The lions turn their guns on her now, and Serac shakes his head.
It is over, he says,
and he sounds disappointed.
Service is my duty,
Rain says as the lions take aim.
Duty is an honor.
She snarls the words through her teeth and through the blood in her mouth.
The greatest honor is to know true faith,
she says, as they open fire. Davin Wick staggers and falls against something. The bole of a tree, rimmed with frost. He blinks hard, snorts blood back into his nose, tastes it at the back of his throat. What? He mumbles. His own voice echoes back at him from between the other trees. What? Until it sounds like a crowd of accusers. Wick raises his las rifle and braces it against his shoulder, pointing it into the mist and the forest until the word stops echoing back at him. Everything is pin-sharp from the stems, bright with shadow and light. He smells damp earth and stagnant water, and hears the rustle of leaves. Wick's heart hammers, and it's not just because of the dose. It's because he knows exactly where he is. But he can't think how he got here. No good, Wick says to the forest. That echoes back at him too. No good, no good, no good. Wick pushes himself away from the tree, leaving a bloody handprint on the bark. Just like the last time he was here. The echo of his voice fades away to be replaced with another sound. Another echo. Only this one is mournful and hollow, and it makes his heart want to stop in his chest. Howling. He hears howling. Wick starts running without looking back. He can't look back because he knows what he'll see. Vicious shapes trailing smoke. Coal-fire eyes and snarling maws. Dusk hounds come to take the soul that they are owed. The howling follows at his heels as Wick throws himself through the trees, snagging on branches that reach like claws and roots that try to trip him. He feels the heat of the hounds at his back. The howling is deafeningly close. Wick breaks the tree line and sees it. The lake, stretching out like a black mirror. He doesn't stop running until he's in the water to his waist. It is freezing cold. Only then does he look back. But the shoreline is empty. He can't hear the howling anymore. Just the lapping of water and the gentle knocking together of stones pushed by the lake's edges.